Gardening advice for a season like none other. Are you growing a pandemic garden? The surge in gardening this year is being compared to the victory gardens during World Wars I and II. Local nurseries are slammed. Maine Seed Company sold out of popular vegetables in early spring. And the Burpee Seed Company says it sold more seeds this March than any time in its history. And it's been selling seeds since the late 1800s. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Whether you are a beginner gardener or a seasoned green thumb, every year sees a new crop of problems and pests. Our experts, Pamela Hargest with the UMaine Cooperative Extension and state horticulturist Gary Fish, answer your questions about veggies, perennials, native plants, lawn care, and more. How is your garden growing? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Many of us have turned to gardening during this pandemic, whether to grow vegetables or just have something to do outside that takes us away from screens and news. Today, our gardening experts are here to offer advice on summer gardens, and they are ready to take your questions. Joining me, Pamela Hargest, who is a horticulture professional with the Cumberland County Cooperative Extension, and Gary Fish. He is our state horticulturalist with the Maine Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions about native plants, a vegetable you've never grown before? Pests. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you both for being here and welcome back. Pam, I'll start with you. I think that this is a time in the season when people are unsure about whether they can start a vegetable garden if they haven't already. Here we are in mid-June. Is it too late to get started? Are there things that you can plant now that will give you a bounty later this summer?
Yeah, so actually right now is a great time to plant your vegetable crops. Now, it could be a good time to start a garden as well. The only thing to keep in mind is if you're growing right in the ground, just being aware of what's already there. Is there a lot of weeds or grass? Are you trying to establish something that you might need to focus on getting rid of the weeds first? But otherwise, you know, raised beds, containers are a great and quick and easy way to get started. And now is a great time to plant. You know, we're in the safe zone as far as being able to plant those warm vegetable crops. You know, you can get tomatoes and eggplant and peppers all out there now. And you can certainly still plant things like carrots and other crops that might be a little bit more tolerant to the heat. So this is a great time to get planting, and certainly don't stop. You know, you can do succession planting of different crops as well throughout the season.
Wonderful. Gary, I know that you work with nurseries throughout the state. I've been reading articles all morning about how all over the country people have a surge in interest in gardening. What are you hearing from the nurseries that you talked with?
So a lot of the nurseries in Maine are doing quite well. They have sold out of a lot of plants or much earlier than they usually do. And they've done a great job of putting together ways of purchasing and keeping social distancing. So hats off to all of them that have done such a great job to make it so that people can buy their plants, buy their seeds, and get outside and use this time productively.
Gary, what would you say to a first-time gardener, somebody either who's put in a vegetable garden or is maybe experimenting with some perennials they haven't before, other than welcome on board? What are some basic tips?
Well, first and foremost, I would say be patient and don't be disappointed if some things don't work out, because it's nature and nature has lots of foibles. So just keep in mind that you have to pay attention to watering, and I think that oftentimes people may even water a little bit too much. So that can be just as damaging as allowing the plants to go too dry. So if you are watering plants, you know, get them to the point where maybe they're just about ready to wilt, and then water them and water deeply and try to water the root system instead of the tops of the plants as much as possible.
Well, that's an interesting part of the conversation because we are in not quite a drought, but an unusually dry spell right now, correct?
We have been through a very dry spell. Luckily, we did get a little bit of rain the last couple of days, but things have been unusually dry. We had so much rain early in the season, and then it just all shut off. And so there definitely have been a lot of signs of drought already, especially in lawns and lawns that have grubs and things like that. They're really starting to show their dryness.
I want to return to grubs in just a second, but Pam, let me ask you what Gary's talking about watering. I had always understood that if you've first planted seeds or if you have little tender seedlings, that you really want to water them every day, every morning if possible. Is that true? And then once they sort of take hold to maybe do a little less watering, what do you recommend?
Yeah, that's definitely true. I would say that you want to be aware of what soil type you have first, because certainly some soil types, for instance, if you have a more clay soil, that's going to hold moisture more. So you might not have to water quite as much when you are trying to germinate your seeds or get plants established. But certainly you can expect to water more once you've seeded any, you know, vegetable crops or herbs or flowers. And then same with if you are transplanting some seedlings that you purchased from a nursery or you grew yourself, you're going to want to water those a little bit more early on, and then you can kind of ease off the watering. And from that point, you'll want to make sure, of course, it depends on what it is, but typically your plants will want an inch and a quarter to an inch and a half of water every week. So using a rain gauge to track, you know, how much rainfall we're getting, and then just kind of supplementing by water, making up for the water that didn't come in the form of rain throughout the week. So,
right.
And you mentioned a great point. I just want to highlight what you said as far as watering early in the day and at the base of the plant is always the way to go.
Yeah, and it's interesting. An inch and a quarter and an inch and a half a week is more than you would think, isn't it? I think that's a mistake that a lot of beginners make, is they don't really water quite enough, correct?
That's true. Yeah, I think, you know, I would say especially early on when you first plant your seedling, that water is really essential for establishment. So, and if you don't water, and, you know, like you said, beginner gardeners might forget how often you need to water, your plant is going to be more susceptible to disease and pests. So that's really an important factor for maintaining healthy plants.
Okay, Gary, talking about this dry weather and grubs, are we going to see more grubs, or are they just going to be more evident because of the conditions?
So they're going to be more evident. We've got a perennial grub problem now with European chafers especially. Japanese beetles in southern Maine haven't been quite as bad as they have been in other parts of the state where they've been kind of expanding their range. And we also have the Asiatic garden beetle now. And they often are in places where lights attract them at night and near very large trees where they gather, and then they go down on the lawn and lay their eggs. So when you have a drought early in the season, that's when the grubs are feeding on the roots of the grasses at the same time. And you can often see a lawn that should be green at this time turn completely brown very quickly. And that should be a sign of you need to go out and kind of tug on the grass, and if it pulls right up like a carpet that's not tacked down, then you need to start looking for white grubs.
And what do you do if you have white grubs?
Well, if you have white grubs, your lawn can handle a few. So you could have as many as maybe four or five in a square foot area and then just irrigate properly. So again, with lawns, it's about an inch of water a week, and to water deeply, just like you do with your vegetables once they're established. And if you have more than that, then you have to make a decision on whether you want to try to control them or not, or if you're just going to renovate the lawn later on in the late summer, fall. In terms of alternatives for management, there are things like beneficial nematodes that you can purchase. They're called HB nematodes that will work on all the different grub species that we have. And usually those are applied right after those beetles come out and then lay their eggs. And there's also a new Bacillus thuringiensis material called Grubgon G, which has been found to be somewhat effective on some of the grubs. Otherwise, you know, the other treatments would be doing things like core aeration, and there's also another type of equipment that can actually put very high-pressure water down through the turf, through the thatch, and kill the grubs that way. And then, of course, there are, you know, traditional pesticides as well.
All right. We're talking gardening today. Happy Friday on Maine Calling, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Pam, I know that you work with community gardens all over the state. What are we seeing this year? Are we seeing a surge in interest in people being a part of their community garden? And is there any kind of, is there a change in what people are growing this year?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there has definitely been an increased interest in community gardening, for especially in urban areas where people don't have access to land. I know I've spoken to some community garden coordinators kind of early in the season to discuss what their plans were for this year, and a lot of them did say this was a lot, you know, more participation than they have had in the past. And I think, you know, every part of the state is handling things a little differently, but you know, for the most part, people are adapting and trying to share new guidelines or protocol for community gardeners. And typically, you know, community gardens are tend to be a little bit spread out. So it's doable to kind of change their practices. And certainly, I think a lot of coordinators were trying to delay a start for the season, you know, to encourage people to stay home and really start planting later than usual. But I will mention that we did, our home horticulture team did come out with some guidelines for community gardens. And there, it's really a practical guide for how you might be able to change your practices to really reduce the health risks related to having many people kind of coming in and out of the garden. So I think that can be helpful. And we really created this based off of what we were hearing from coordinators and what would work for them as far as different management practices.
Well, that's terrific. I'm going to start with a couple questions. And the first one is for my colleague, Jennifer Mitchell, and this will make you smile, I think. What, short of moving or building a helicopter landing pad on top, can be done about Jerusalem artichokes running rampant in a garden bed that has lots of other perennials in it? I have a towering jungle of the things that sprang up from just 6 tubers, and now they're everywhere, outshading everything. Am I doomed to relocate everything I can and dig up the whole bed? Gary?
Wow, that's a great question. I would say that maybe she is, that she will, you know, potentially have to do that, because unless she can find all the tubers and dig them out and move them somewhere else, it's going to have to go one way or the other.
She's going to have a Jerusalem artichoke patch and something else somewhere else. Is this common? Do Jerusalem artichokes often take over an entire perennial garden?
It's a very aggressive plant, yes. Yeah.
That's interesting. Okay. I have a question from Cindy. I had some potatoes and garlic from the store that were starting to sprout. So I put them in the ground and the sprouts are growing tall now. What do I do next? Pam?
Oh, goodness. Yeah. Well, I'm assuming that she may have purchased these from a grocery store. I mean, she refers to the store.
It sounds like it. Yep.
So usually it's better, I'll just mention this so she knows for future notice, with potatoes, it's better to purchase potato seed, because you can ensure that you won't have as many disease problems, and they've been tested. So that's just a note for future reference. But as far as potatoes, they, you know, this is a good time of year to plant them. I'd say, you know, just watch out for any pests that might show up in your garden. And they often do like to be hilled. So, you know, we have a great bulletin online that can help guide her through the process of how to maintain her potato patch. And then as far as garlic goes, usually that's planted, depending on where you are in the state, and towards the end of October in the fall time. So she could experiment and see how it goes, but usually that's a better time to plant it. I'm not sure when her timing was. Maybe she did plant it in the fall, but see what happens. It's a crop that's planted in the fall, and usually it's harvested sometime in July, depending on where you are in the state. But good luck. I mean, it's fun to experiment.
It is fun to experiment. We're going to go to Andrew, who's calling from Unity. Hi, Andrew. Go ahead.
Hello. I work for the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, and I just wanted to mention that we have a lot of programming focused on gardeners right now. We have a gardening Q&A session every week. The next one will be on Thursday at 3 o'clock, and you can sign up for that through our website. We also have a kids gardening club starting next week, which will feature a story reading and a craft project for kids from 6 to 10 who are interested in gardening. And we have a gardener newsletter that goes out every week, as well as a pest report that deals with some of those bugs that gardeners are experiencing at that time of year. It's time appropriate.
Andrew, what I'd love for you to do, if you don't mind, is to go to today's Maine Calling Facebook post and put some more information in our comment section so people who are listening to this know where to turn, where your website is.
I
suspect it's mofka.org, right?
Yes, that's right.
Thanks so much. Thanks for calling in. We'll go to Maureen, who's calling from Cape Elizabeth. Hi, Maureen. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for having me today here. I have a question regarding fruit trees. I live in Cape Elizabeth, and I'm looking into planting plum trees and peaches. Can someone talk to me about those? Are those, you know, can I do them without using pesticides? Because I'd like to actually eat the fruit and make some jam.
Pam, what do you think?
Yeah, so you can certainly plant them, and certainly there are a number of organic kind of orchards across the state. I would say that just trying to do some research in advance to know the site conditions for those trees and really picking out the best varieties in advance as well. Kind of take your time getting into this if you can select varieties that are more resistant to disease and pests, you will be much better off. And a lot of that information can be found on our website as far as which varieties are best for Maine and what will do best for our climate as well. So absolutely, I'd say go for it. You know, a lot of home gardeners have gotten into fruit trees, and certainly if you have the right site conditions, it can be really successful.
Maureen, good luck to you. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address is talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We're talking gardening. It's Friday. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Payroll Management. Customized payroll processing serving businesses as small as one employee and up. PayrollMGT.com. And Downeast Institute, encouraging you to support marine research and education by making an online gift today at downeastinstitute.org.
Welcome to Maine Public's This Is My Maine.
What's nice about living in a small town is that you can really make a difference. So the things that you do, people really appreciate and enjoy. And being a creative person, that's not always true. I can make a huge difference in other people's lives by the things that I do. I teach classes. I'm fortunate to live in and around so many creative people. It's really powerful. There's something about connecting with your community that is really important to me. I'm Mally Weber. I'm from Hollowell, and this is my Maine.
This Is My Maine is brought to you through the support of Eaton Peabody, the Maine Community Foundation, and the generous support of members like you. Thank you. Go to MainePublic.org to experience more of Maine Public's celebration of Maine's first 200 years. Happy birthday, Maine.
This Symphony Sunday on Maine Public Classical, tune in to hear the Portland Symphony Orchestra in Mahler's First. You'll hear Bruce Hagen conduct the PSO in Mahler's Titan and in Ernest Bloch's Shalamo, featuring internationally renowned cellist Matt Haimovitz as the starring soloist. Don't miss Mahler's First this Symphony Sunday at 3 on Maine Public Classical.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we have our gardening experts here ready to dispense advice. They are horticulturalist Gary Fish with the Maine Department of Agriculture and Pamela Hargest with Cumberland County Cooperative Extension. We invite you to be part of the conversation. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Pam, earlier you were talking about watering in the morning, if at all possible. If it's today, for example, and you think, oh gosh, I didn't get to watering in the morning, but my gardens sure look like they could use some water, is evening second best?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, that is a good rule of thumb, trying to water in the morning, but we all know that things come up and it's not always possible, and certainly I'm guilty of missing that window, but certainly water, the choice between watering and not watering, if your plants really need it, you definitely want to water. So the way that you can minimize any potential disease or creating that environment where disease will thrive is to water the base of the plant. So if you water in the evenings, especially try to be mindful of not getting the leaves wet of your plants. So that's another thing you can keep in mind if evening is the only time that works for you.
Gary, my husband wants to know what's eating his Joe pie weed. He says it seems to be at night from the top down, and it might be eating the bindweed too.
So are there little shot holes in the bindweed and the Joe pie weed?
Oh, I don't know. He's not here.
So right now on bindweed, there's a lot of what we call flea beetles, and they make little shot holes in the leaves. And, you know, it looks like they got hit with a spray from a shotgun or a BB gun or something like that. So that may be what's happening. I wouldn't know for sure without being able to see a picture or something like that. Not something that I would get super concerned about, especially for something like Joe pieweed, but it's probably that. I wanted to just add a little bit on the fruit tree thing, and I love that people want to grow fruit trees, but they really do need to be prepared for pest problems, especially with peaches and plums are one of the favorites of the Japanese beetle, and they also are often attacked by the lesser peach tree borer. So it is something that you have to be prepared for. So you really need to do your homework if you want to have a home orchard.
Is there a fruit tree that's less problematic? Are cherry trees easier, apple trees?
No. Probably not. They all have a whole host of pest complexes that come in, both disease-wise as well as insect-wise, and that's why it's so hard to grow fruits that people think are perfect. You know, I wish that we didn't all think they had to be perfect, but in order to do that, it takes a lot of work.
An email here from Carly. I have an elevated garden bed full of lettuce that is almost ready to be harvested. The lettuce usually bolts, so my plan this year is to harvest quickly and use the bed to plant either more lettuce or another crop. What would you recommend, trying to plant more lettuce, or are there other crops I could plant at this point in the growing season? I worry that lettuce won't do well as the temperature continues to increase. Pam.
Yeah, so there are some varieties of lettuce that are a little more heat tolerant, and that'll usually, you know, if you're depending on what company you're buying from, you or if it's at a local nursery, it'll say that on the seed packet. So you could keep your eye out for that, but you know, typically, for the most part, lettuces don't like the heat. So there are some other options. You could plant some beans. You know, bush beans is a great thing to do in that kind of situation in a raised bed. You could also do even plant carrots or beets. There's quite a few options. You could even go with some, small edible flowers like nasturtiums. If you have the budget, it's not too late to purchase transplants and, get some cucumbers in there or even some smaller determinate tomato varieties. There's quite a few options, especially if your lettuce is ready to be harvested now.
All right. Kendra on Facebook asks, is seaweed a recommended mulch or covering in a new flower garden? Gary, I know vegetable gardeners will use seaweed, but that can even be a problem, right? Because it's full of nutrients, but it's hard to dig in, isn't it?
So with seaweed, I think you really need to compost it before you start using it as a mulch or a cover around plants. And so it can release both salts as well as nutrients. And if you use it green, then it is a potential problem.
Mm. So throw some in your compost. Do you rinse it first with your hose before you do that?
No. Well, I think it's always good to rinse it off if you're taking it right out of the ocean. You don't want to just put it right in there. So if you can reduce the amount of salt that's on it and then put it into the compost, I think that can be helpful.
Okay. We'll go to Amy, who is calling from York. Hi, Amy. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to know your guest's opinion about putting red plastic mulch down for tomatoes. The red plastic cover.
Mm-hmm. Pam?
Yeah. So, using plastic mulch works really well for tomatoes because tomatoes love the heat. So not only will you increase the soil temperature, but you will also help yourself out a lot by keeping the weeds down in your tomato patch. So I think it's a great option as long as you don't mind purchasing that material and using the plastic. You could also use barrier fabric as well. That works too. You can even reuse that material from year to year. So absolutely, it will definitely help with your tomato crop.
Amy, thanks for your question. An email from Barbara. We planted Monarda to attract hummingbirds and butterflies. Especially the red variety has been problematic because as it blooms, little and voracious white worms eat their way through the blooms and destroy the flower and weaken the plant. There are sprays for this, but they seem toxic. I don't want to save the plant and kill the butterflies and birds. Can you recommend a good organic product or recipe that will work systemically? By the time you see these little worms, it's too late. Gary.
So anytime that you have a pest like that and you think about trying to control it, you can think in a couple of different ways. One is that, is it a pest that you're going to have year after year after year, and should you just kind of decide to change what you're growing and take care of it that way? Because there aren't organic solutions that are going to be safe for the butterflies and the bees. Anything that you use, whether it be the natural pesticide that's approved for organic use, or a systemic pesticide, or any kind of a traditional pesticide, they're all going to potentially be toxic to bees or butterflies. And so I wouldn't be able to give a prescription without knowing exactly what the pest is. It could be anything from white flies to, I don't know what else, but it would be best to get a picture of that and or bring a sample to the local cooperative extension office or send a picture to me at gary.fish@maine.gov, and we can help you out with that.
All right. I have a question here from Lucy. What are some of the best veggies to grow inside? I don't have any backyard space, but would love to start a garden. Pam, what's good on the windowsill?
Yeah, so the biggest challenge with indoors growing is that you really often won't have enough light inside, even if you use a windowsill. I mean, you can have a decent amount of light, but that's going to be the limiting factor for you. So I would say if she happens to have any grow lights, then she might want to utilize those. And I'd say, you know, anything from microgreens to some different herbs would do pretty well. You will be limited to obviously what you could grow, but there are so many different varieties of microgreens that you can do that are really tasty and also have a pretty quick turnaround. So you could be harvesting something that you planted within a week.
Wow.
It's very satisfying project to kind of get into, and you can plant them densely in trays, so you won't even need that much supplemental light through grow lights. So, you know, things like pea shoots will be often take 7 days, or, you know, radishes might take 12 days. So it's definitely the way to go if you have the space and are able to provide a little bit of supplemental light.
Terrific. Thanks for that. We'll go to Ann calling from Freeport. Hi, Ann. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. We have slugs and snails, and I'm wondering if your guests have any good, mostly organic thoughts on getting rid of them besides beer.
Okay. I can handle this one for sure. So when it comes to slugs and snails and things like that, one of the things that you want to do is go around your garden and remove any kind of horizontal rocks or boards, and try to keep a area around the garden or the area where you're having problems mowed down so that you're not providing a good refuge for them. And then you can actually put out on purpose boards or newspapers that are held down, and every morning come out and pick them up, and underneath there you will find your slugs and your snails, and you can step on them, you can torture them, you can do whatever you want to take care of them. You know, otherwise there are no real good alternatives. There is an organic approved treatment for it that is somewhat effective, but I think that you'll find if you do these other things that will take care of it.
So you're luring them somewhere away from the garden and then getting rid of them.
Correct.
All right. Good luck, Ann. I'm going to go to a question here from Karen. I have very small pepper plants that are about 5 inches tall and not very robust. Some of them have blossoms, and I'd like to know if I should pinch off the blossoms to encourage growth of the plants. Karen, my pepper plants aren't very robust either. Pam?
Yeah, so I guess I would be curious when she planted them, because if they were planted a few weeks ago, I know a lot of, at least the southern part of Maine and really throughout the state, got hit with some cold weather at night and pretty late into the year. So certainly that could have stunted the growth if those night temperatures dropped below 50. So that might have a little bit to do with it. Usually whenever I plant those types of crops, I will automatically pinch off any flowers when I plant them just so I can get those roots established first. But then after that, I wouldn't pinch off any of the flowers because I really, that's where those peppers are going to be growing. So it might not hurt if she just planted it to pinch off those flowers and then, you know, try to give it some extra love and care by making sure it's watered well and everything. But I've heard a lot from people, at least in our area, that they planted things a little too early in the season. So that's something to be aware of with those warm weather crops.
If somebody did that and planted their pepper plants and then there were a couple cold nights, would you give up on them and replant new ones or just see what happens?
I would see what happens because it's not that it won't grow. It just might have been stunted a little bit. So it might, for instance, that plant that was planted a few weeks ago when those cold night temperatures set in versus, you know, a plant that I'm putting in the ground right now actually might end up growing at the same pace, even though it was planted several weeks later. So it just might need a little time to catch up. So I wouldn't pull it out just yet. Just see how it goes and just try to give it a little extra attention.
All right. Well, we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your gardening questions and comments. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Bernstein Scherr, a law firm dedicated to clients' businesses and their best interests. BernsteinSure.com. AltE Store, providing solar power, battery backup equipment, and advice to solar installers and DIYers since 1999. AltE Store. And Bangor Savings Bank, celebrating all the ways people all over Maine are making life a little better. Bangor.com/spreadkindness. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
Percival Proctor Baxter died in Portland on June 12, 1969, at the age of 92. He served as Maine's 53rd governor from 1921 to 1925. A noted philanthropist, he donated several pieces of land to the public domain, including Baxter State Park in Piscataquis County. Reflecting on this generous gift, he stated, "Man is born to die. His works are short-lived. Buildings crumble, monuments decay, and wealth vanishes. But Katahdin, in all its glory, forever shall remain the mountain of the people of Maine."
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Roosevelt Campobello International Park and the Island Institute. Happy birthday, Maine.
Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour, is white America coming to terms at last with systemic racism?
We had a mentor years ago who said, if you can get three white people with no people of color present to speak out against racism, you've done revolutionary work. I didn't believe it until I tried.
Racism and the possibility of change. Next time on the New Yorker Radio Hour.
And that's coming up tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock and again Sunday evening at 11 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. We're talking about issues that arise with early summer gardens, and our panelists are taking your questions. My guest, Pamela Hargest with the Cumberland County Cooperative Extension, and Gary Fish, who is state horticulturalist. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We've got so many questions coming in. We'll try to get through as many as possible. We'll start with Luke calling from Portland. Hi, Luke. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call. I've got a backyard garden, and I did start a greenhouse. This is my second year doing it. I learned a hard lesson the first year. But I've got cabbage worms, and I'm trying not to use any pesticides. And I ordered some ladybugs, which are coming next week. I call them reinforcements. And I've been mechanically going through and, you know, pulling the bugs out. But someone suggested putting this fiberglass stuff down that would kill the worms. It's supposed to be natural. But I'm wondering, would that also affect the ladybugs?
Pam?
Oh, gosh. I think I'm going to let Gary take this one. I think he might know a little bit more.
Never heard of this fiberglass stuff, so I don't know anything about that. But with cabbage worms, they can be controlled when they're in their earlier stages with Bacillus thuringiensis. So it's a bacterial insecticide that is approved for organic use and very low in risk for you, for other non-target organisms, and for anything else. So that might be one thing to do. Otherwise, I haven't heard anything about the fiberglass thing.
Well, good luck to you, Luke. We'll go to Thomas, who's calling from Bodenham. Hi, Thomas. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello. Thank you. I had a brief comment about potatoes. I strongly urge people to plant potatoes. There's no problem planting between now and actually the 4th of July, as an old-timer told me. Plant potatoes by the 4th and you'll always get a crop. You'll have to let the plants die with the frost, but you'll still get a full crop that late. And it's a great plant to plant with new ground, raw ground, sod ground, till it up as hard as you can. And then you're working it so many different ways that you can keep ahead of the sod, and you'll get a fine beginning plant to put onto new ground. And you'll suffocate a lot of the grass roots and or mechanically, manually, just remove them by hilling, troughing and hilling. I do many different things, and I always plant later than June 20th.
Thomas, what's your favorite variety?
My favorite varieties used to be Green Mountain and Kennebec, which I selected seed from year to year, and I had them for over 25 years. But late blight back in 2009 wiped them out. They had no resistance. So now I use, let's see, what is it that I use now? I bought two varieties that were late blight resistant, and one of them is Satina, and the other one I forget at this point, but I've kept their seeds steadily ever since then, and they are remarkably blight-resistant, but not as flavorful as the Kennebec Green Mountain.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Thomas, thanks so much for calling and sharing your enthusiasm for planting potatoes and some of the benefits. And I know, Pam, it's just really fun to plant potatoes, for example, with kids. It's like an Easter egg hunt come fall.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be a lot of fun. The only thing I'll mention is that, you know, potatoes might not be the best option for someone with a small garden because you don't get quite a bit of crops out of it. So just something to be mindful of if you only have a few raised beds. But certainly if you have the space, it can be really rewarding and a lot of fun with kids.
Thomas, thanks for your call. An email here from Andrea. Keeping the UN reports on species extinction in mind, if my landlord will let me plant one small tree in one type of scrub, what are the best native picks? Gary.
So I think that the best natives that you could plant would be either in the oak, willow, or cherry families, and then make sure that it's a native tree. So something like a red oak, which has green leaves, or a black cherry, or a black willow. All of those support a lot of native insects that help to support our native birds. And you won't notice that those insects are on those trees because they've basically developed together. So you don't end up having a big pest problem like you do with some sort of a invasive pest that comes in like the Japanese beetle. So, you know, definitely something like a red oak. And there are a lot of resources available to help you make those kinds of choices. In fact, one of the best that I've found is the Native Plant Trust has a Plant Finder app right now, as well as Maine Audubon. And so, you know, those are two places where you can find out about native trees and, you know, the ones that are going to help to support a lot more insects as well as birds.
An email here from Saul. I started sweet potato slips 2 months ago. Amazing. The slips are substantial clusters of stems and leaves, but the roots appear out of the potato, not connected to the slip. How do I plant at this point? Pam, I've never tried sweet potatoes.
Yeah, so the slips can be planted right into the ground, and usually, at least here in Maine, it's good to provide some sort of black mulch if you're able to. So that would mean black plastic or a barrier fabric. And that's really just because the sweet potatoes prefer that warmer soil. And that'll help you with weeds as well. So you can go ahead and set up that black plastic or barrier fabric and poke holes in it and go ahead and slip those sweet potato slips right in those holes, and I think you'll find quite a bit of success using that mulch with it.
All right, an email from Nancy. My whole garden is raised on an inch of tunnels. I suspect voles and moles. I try to tamp them down every morning, but the plants are still wilting because their roots are drying in the tunnels. I set snap traps, but have only caught and I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, Pyromyscus deer mouse? Bycatch, you'd call it.
Yeah.
Gary, thoughts for Nancy?
Is the white-footed mouse and also one of the Lyme disease carriers. But it could also be chipmunks. This is a really banner year for chipmunks, and they like to tunnel under gardens, and they also like to eat garden plants at times. So it could be chipmunks. In terms of trying to trap or catch moles especially, you really have to use what are called, and, you know, these are killing traps, harpoon traps that are actually placed over one of their trails, and you can guess what it does. So, you know, in terms of voles, keep in mind that voles are eating primarily vegetation. They're vegetarians, where moles are primarily eating earthworms or sometimes grubs. So when you're trying to catch those different types of rodents or mammals, you need to use different techniques to try to capture them. So voles, oftentimes, you can catch in mouse traps, but because they're mostly underground, they're hard to get.
How can she tell what it is that's making the tunnels?
Well, if it's moles, they make significant mounds when they come up. So that would be a sign of moles, so a star-nosed mole. With voles and with chipmunks, not so much. So you would just see a hole, a smaller hole for a vole than a chipmunk. The voles are fairly small. And so, other than watching and looking for them and trying to catch them that way, it's difficult to ID. Maybe with a couple of pictures we might be able to help, but otherwise it's not that simple.
All right. We're going to try to sneak in one or two more questions. An email from Lara. What can I use for poison ivy that grows near my well? Gary, thoughts?
So poison ivy near your well, that is a tough one. There are herbicides that you can use that are very unlikely to leach into the groundwater. Although when you're near your well, if you don't have a sealed well, so if it's a typical well that has a little metal casing that comes up that's maybe 6 or 8 inches in diameter, if that's not properly sealed around it, anything that you apply near there can actually go right down into the well directly. Otherwise, there are herbicides that can be used that will control the poison ivy and manage it that way. Or else what you need to do is grub it out and keep it from sprouting, keep it from producing any leaves, and within a year or two or maybe three, it'll be gone. And then the other thing you could try is what I call sheet mulching, where you can buy cardboard at any hardware store that comes in a roll and put that down and then put leaves or mulch over it, and then put another layer of cardboard and leaf and mulch and just keep doing that. And then that will suffocate the poison ivy as well.
All right. Try to squeeze in one more. Jason in Thomaston, if you could be quick, that'd be great.
Oh, I will be. I was calling to discourage plums and peaches because I failed miserably. But 12 years into it, I had the bulletproof tree. I believe it's called Olympic Giant. It's an Asian pear. I never spray it. I never touch it. The leaves are always clean. The fruit is fantastic and productive. So that's one I know of, a lot easier than peaches and plums if you were starting this year. Thank you for taking my call.
An Asian pear called Olympic Giant.
Correct.
Do you know that, Pam?
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with that variety, but yeah, interesting. Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in with that tip, Jason. We have so many calls we were not able to get to. Pam and Gary, you are both reachable, right? People can contact you directly, correct?
Absolutely.
Yes, and I just want to mention that our home horticulture team is having virtual office hours Monday through Friday, 11 to 1, and you can access that information on our website if people want to contact us directly and chat about their gardening questions.
Oh, that's great. Virtual office hours, just like when you're in college, you went to office hours with your professor. And what's the website, Pam?
Yeah, so you can find it on our garden and yard website, and it should be pretty accessible from there. And it'll give you information about how to connect. It is through Zoom, but people can call in or do video conferencing, whatever they prefer.
Okay, wonderful. And we'll put links to that on our webpage and Facebook page. Thank you both for being here.
Just mention one other website. So it's gotpests.org.
Gotpests.org. Great.
And you can ID a lot of things there.
That's Gary Fish, the Maine State Horticulturist, and Pamela Hargest with the Cumberland County Cooperative Extension. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Our theme song was composed by Mike Jandrow. Today's Maine Calling will be rebroadcast at 7. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Stay tuned for the latest update from the Maine CDC. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.